Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
It's hard to imagine the Yankees leaving New York or the Lakers departing Los Angeles, except that in order to get to Los Angeles, the Lakers had to bail out of Minneapolis, and New York lost both the Dodgers and the Giants. The most recent NBA team to change home states is the Oklahoma City Thunder, known for four decades as the Seattle Supersonics. The process leading to that relocation was fraught with lies, posturing, and betrayal, and now videotape, thanks to Jason Reed and Adam Brown, two of the men responsible for a new documentary film titled Sonics Gate, Requiem for a Team. When I spoke recently with the two filmmakers, I began our conversation by asking Adam Brown what distinguished the uprooting of the Sonics from the moves various other teams have made.
It's a lot different because there's never been a team with as much success and as much history that is relocated. You know, the Supersonics were in Seattle more than twice as long as any other relocated NBA team. We won a championship in 1979, and, you know, from the 70s all the way through the late 90s, the Sonics had one of the best winning records in the whole league, and they were one of the, you know, flagship franchises that were one of the most recognized teams out there. So the fact that sort of these backroom deals and these scandalous occurrences led to, for the team to be stolen away from Seattle, makes a pretty big statement about the larger state of pro sports in the modern era.
Early in the film, you present NBA Commissioner David Stern talking about what a wonderful building the Sonics have in Seattle after their arena was renovated in 1995. Later, you produce Commissioner Stern in a different vein.
The economics of team ownership at the present time, except in very unusual circumstances, require some kind of public assistance.
Adam, what happened to the home of the Sonics over the course of a decade or so to render it unfit for NBA games and needing public assistance?
Nothing happened with Key Arena. It was the NBA business model that changed. After the 1999 NBA lockout and the strike-shortened season, the NBA business model changed to rely a lot more on these corporate suites. And they started pricing regular fans out of the lower bowl area, and they could no longer function off just ticket sales. They had to get these other revenue streams from restaurants, concessions, and so they started needing these giant mega buildings, as in the film one of the reporters talks about how the new Yankee Stadium is like Disneyland. You know, you could go there and you don't even have to watch the game, and it's just an entertainment palace.
And Key Arena is unfortunately about half the size of the average NBA arena, which means the concourses are smaller. It means they don't have the large restaurants and stuff that generate, and stores that generate the revenue that some of these larger arenas do have.
If anyone has seen a game in Key Arena, the inside of the bowl is actually a great place to watch a basketball game inside of the actual bowl, but it's everything else, the concessions, the concourses, the lack of merchandising space, that's the problem.
Well, when Clay Bennett bought the team from Starbucks head man Howard Schultz back in 2006, Bennett, who was an Oklahoma City guy, said that he intended to keep the team in Seattle. Do you believe that he ever had any such intention?
Absolutely not. He had been quoted several months earlier in Oklahoma publications saying that he was dedicated to bringing pro basketball to Oklahoma. A big part of this about the whole backroom deals is when Hurricane Katrina forced the Hornets to leave New Orleans for 1.5 seasons, Clay Bennett did his old buddy David Stern a big solid by hosting the Hornets in Oklahoma City. And so Stern had to kind of repay his buddy Bennett for that favor. I think that's a lot of what you see with the relationship between those two. As far as Bennett's intentions, you know, the email string and all the evidence from the trial clearly shows that they had never intended to make it work in Seattle. They did everything possible to drive the fans out of the building in Seattle. They traded away marquee players. They didn't let the players go on sports radio or connect with the community at all. You know, it was a very well-done manipulation to steal the team away.
But this is the interesting thing, you know, as we saw in the trial, Clay Bennett actually called an economist who basically testified for Clay Bennett that an NBA team brings no economic value to a community. At the same time, he was simultaneously running a public campaign in Oklahoma City to get them to pass a public subsidy because they could become a big time city and it would help the economy there. So there was this big contradiction going on, and for no one to notice that or to comment on that, I mean, that states a lot about what the NBA is trying to do in terms of pitting cities against each other to try to get an NBA team.
Since you have mentioned the trial, we should get into that a little bit. There was a lawsuit to try to keep the Sonics where they were because they were committed to play there by their lease for two more years. Why didn't that work? It sounds like it should have been easy to win.
The city had a very strong case. Basically, what it amounts to is the Sonics were supposed to play at Key Arena through the end of this season, through 2010. They had a lease that had a specific performance clause. Specific performance basically says that if we want to keep the team here, we can keep them no matter what because it's a special entity that can't be replaced monetarily. And so the city had a somewhat bulletproof case because Clay Bennett and everyone said, hey, if the judge holds it up, we'll stay the next two seasons, you know, because that's what's going to happen. But Clay Bennett hired a very skilled attorney named Brad Keller. They came up with a lot of ways to paint the city in a bad light, and they kind of swayed public opinion that the city was losing. They kind of embarrassed our mayor, Greg Nichols. And while publicly he said for months and months and months, this is not about money. We're doing this for the right reasons. We're going to keep the team here no matter what for 2 years. About an hour before the judge was going to issue her ruling, a press conference was called duly in Oklahoma City and Seattle, and the mayor said he accepted a settlement agreement, basically giving up the team and the history for $45 million.
Seattle's fans seem to feel that they could influence the ownership of the Sonics. You filmed several of their demonstrations, including one in which the fans were addressed by one of their favorite former Sonics, Gary Payton.
This team should not move. That's right, I don't think Gary. It's going to move. Yeah. And I want to raise my jersey in the rafters here in Seattle.
Jason, as you collected material for the film, did you get the impression that anybody connected with the team during the Bennett years was paying any attention to the fans?
The moves they were making were both good for the future, as you see the Oklahoma City's success, but they are also not in the best interest of the fans. To trade, you know, we drafted Kevin Durant, who we see has just won the scoring title. You know, they never let him connect to the community.
Yeah, I mean, Bennett never made any efforts to connect to Seattle fans. He was, you know, never here connecting, doing marketing. You know, regarding the rally, that was put on by the Save Our Sonics group, for whom I was a volunteer, and Jason produced several short videos during the trial and during the rally. Over 3,000 people came out to the courthouse and fought for the Sonics, and ultimately, no matter how much we love the team, you can't blame the fans. Just like you can't blame the fans of Oklahoma for wanting a team, you can't blame the fans of Seattle because we did support the team.
And it's tough. They traded, you know, Ray Allen and Rashard Lewis, who are two superstars who were here and were connected to the community. So we got Kevin Durant. We could have kept those two guys, and the team probably would have made the playoffs and would have had that connection to the community. But they shipped everyone out. We started losing the identity of the Seattle Supersonics, and that in turn kind of turned off the community to the team. And especially after Howard Schultz's last few years running the team, he alienated a lot of people here with the kind of moves he made by trading Gary Payton. I think that the community was already kind of primed when Bennett took over, and then the things that Bennett did really put it over the top in terms of disconnecting the community from the team and the organization.
You included in your film several passionate fans. Certainly the most articulate among them is celebrated author Sherman Alexie, who comments on what the loss of the Sonics means to him and to Seattle.
It is death. I mean, it's been a year and a half of a funeral, a wake. And the weather is depressing. The winters are depressing. They're gray and monotonous.
Did you have to seek out Sherman Alexie, or did he learn what you guys were doing and come find you?
We sought him out, and he was somebody who we knew we had to have in the film just because he's so articulate and so passionate, and he speaks for people and articulates things in a way that nobody else could. One of his friends forwarded him the trailer that we'd put online, and he finally said, okay, I got to do this. And so that was our longest interview, and up there with Gary Payton is probably the most fun to do.
The overall impression created by the film is that Clay Bennett, the current owner of the former Sonics, now playing in Oklahoma City, is a shameless liar. Are you at all concerned about how he's going to react to Sonics Gate?
No, not really, because what we did in the film was just present the facts. I mean, yes, there are some small things that show that we are Sonics fans. We are from Seattle and our team was stolen. So there's a couple things. But in terms of the information we present in the film, it's all factually based. The emails between him and David Stern, all the things that maybe paint him in a bad light, we're using his own words and the things he said. He said 9 months before he bought the team that he was looking to buy a team to move them to Oklahoma City. You know, he said he was going to make a good faith and give his best effort and signed a legal document saying that he would do that, and he didn't. And so we just wanted to present that as well as, you know, the way we presented our city government and our state government. They let us down, and those facts are presented. Basically, everybody in a position of power along the way did something that contributed to why we lost the Sonics from Seattle, and we wanted to get all those facts in one place and let those speak for themselves.
And I think it's important to note that we did reach out to Clay Bennett. We reached out to David Stern. We reached out to Howard Schultz. We reached out to Greg Nichols, and they all declined our interview requests.
Do you intend Sonics Gate as a warning to fans in cities where teams are demanding now or may soon be demanding new arenas or stadiums?
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing it already, and, you know, a lot of things are going to change in the next year or two. We're going to find out a lot about the NBA business model with the collective bargaining agreement coming up. We could see another strike-shortened season here after next season in 2011. We're seeing it in Sacramento. They've been trying to get a building there. Indiana, New Orleans, New Jersey is having some issues. So this is definitely a warning for fans of other teams, you know. They are willing to strong-arm you, and if you don't give them your public money, then they'll just take the team away, and they're pitting cities against each other, so no team is truly safe. If a team like the Sonics with 41 years of history and Jack Sikma and Gary Payton and Sean Kemp and Spencer Haywood and all these Hall of Fame guys can move just like that, then, you know, the Knicks could move or the Celtics could move or any of these major teams could move.
You know, it's ironic, given how passionate you guys both are as fans, that one way to read this warning to fans elsewhere is, hey, don't get too involved with these teams because they're in it for the money and they'll hold you up for everything they can get, or they'll go somewhere else where they can get away with it.
We love NBA basketball. I mean, there's no doubt about that. It's too bad that this situation has kind of led us to see the marionette strings behind the whole thing. But we love NBA basketball. There's nothing better than seeing the best players in the world playing on the biggest stage. You know, we still subscribe to League Pass. We still have an active fantasy league, even though it's really painful to watch the Oklahoma teams and see our former players that should be our players succeeding right now. But ultimately, I think that the NBA is a worthwhile thing when you get just the good feeling that it provides for a city when you're making a playoff run.
And there's a definite void here in Seattle without the Sonics. I mean, for the darkest, coldest, rainiest winter months, as Sherman Alexie talks about in the movie, we don't have NBA basketball to kind of keep us warm. The Key Arena is quiet for the most part with the occasional concert. So it's really hard to not have NBA basketball because that's the sport that we enjoy the most. And so we personally want to get the NBA back in Seattle. And we felt like by exposing what happened here, it might help our chances of gaining a team in the future.
Jason Reed is the director of Sonics Gate. Adam Brown is one of the film's producers. They joined me from KUOW in Seattle. Jason, thank you very much for speaking with me.
All right, thanks a lot for having us on.
And Adam, thanks to you as well.
Thanks, Bill.
My conversation with two of the makers of Sonics Gate, Requiem for a Team, will be featured on this week's program. I'll also be talking with our NBA analyst, Kevin Hench, about how well the Oklahoma City Thunder, the former Minneapolis Lakers, and various other teams will do in the NBA playoffs. We'll have a story about why the University of Wisconsin has decided to cut their ties with Nike, and as pro football fans wait to see how big a hammer the Steelers and the NFL will drop on quarterback Ben Roethlisberger, we'll examine how owners, general managers, and coaches around the league weigh talent and potential against baggage like police investigations, domestic violence charges, allegations of assault, sexual and otherwise, drug and alcohol convictions, etc., etc. So join us, and remember, you can always listen to the program at onlyagame.org.